All right, friends, now, since I said we're going to choose variety, we're going to leave the part of the book we've been focusing on, and just for relief, we'll go start in the middle of the book again, and we had reached this point. What had we reached? Yesterday, these are some of the things I've hinted at in my past writings, he says. They have been touched upon vaguely and mysteriously by past teachers and somewhat more explicitly by myself. And he says, I propose to be a little more definite in this new section. I think they have to be very careful, don't they, about how definite they are when they say things. They write so that if you are in the stream, you'll recognize it. And if you're not, you won't recognize it and it won't hurt you. The old saying, those who have eyes to see, let them see, and those who have ears to hear, let them hear. Okay, Tuya is telling me she hears very well. Yeah, yes, dear, that's the video audio, but I'm talking about a different thing here. Thank you. All right, so let's go on. And this is something that many people forget quite often. Teaching, if true, must be in line with the past and must provide scope for endeavor in the present and must also hold out further enlightenment for those who have succeeded or are succeeding in attaining the indicated goals. So what's he saying about the true teaching? You can't just suddenly drop the whole tradition, can you? I mean, if suddenly everything he said was contradicting what Blavatsky said, it wouldn't be in line with the past. It wouldn't be in line with the great tradition. It has to offer for us an incentive and a method of serving and acting in the present. And it's got to somehow point out for people who are ready future steps. Do you find that DK's teaching does this? Is this past, present, and future? I find it does, don't you? There must be a spiritual future indicated. Well, I think he gives us so many things that are in advance of what we can presently do. But certainly the future is indicated. The whole 14 rules, even the 28 rules, are in many respects a future, aren't they? I mean, how many of us can say we fulfilled all of the easy preliminary 14 rules? We really, you know, we haven't. Ponder on this. So it gives you a good say, wait, I'm pondering. Wait, you know, don't rush me. I think the problem sometimes with the second ray is it doesn't move fast enough. It can lack energy and lack warmth, especially the studential side of it. But remember how we read about the second ray in healing yesterday. It was running everywhere, giving everything to everyone without discrimination. So that begins to happen once you feel you have something. It is that which is required now, a spiritual future, for many are attaining the goals proposed by hierarchy and others are working towards them. So somehow an evaluation of where humanity really is necessary for any really good teacher, to always give that which is next needed, but maybe not too much. What happens when you give too much? This is a second-ray question. What do you think? What happens when you give too much? What is the result? Burnout, yeah, could be. Did you say? Slow. No receiver, did you say? Yeah, I'm so sorry. I know you're sitting way back there, and the Danish have a way of not emphasizing things like the Germans do. So if you're all speaking German, I'd be in better shape, you know. Norwegian is even better. In Norwegian? Okay. Is that it? Okay. Okay. Well, don't get too close. No, I think you're probably, you know, given the morning meditation setup, you're about as close as you can be. But I know. But you see, I have these things on. I have to. And then I try this, and then it fades out. And then you see, it's like Danish is not a language of overemphasis. It tends to kind of like, I don't know. It doesn't. Yes, okay. Well, very good. I like that. Thank you. Just shout at me. I'll be happy. I know you try. So anyway, many are attaining the goals, and others are working towards them. So always give a vision, because where there is no vision, you know, the people perish, as it is said. So he's given a tremendous vision. My God, think of the vision that's involved in presenting, oh, the 5 and 7 and even 9 initiations. Is that a vision or what? And then think about the vision that is given when he says, well, and after you've achieved these initiations, you can take the path of higher evolution. And you can maybe go to Betelgeuse or Sirius or Pleiades, you know, different constellations, which are the destiny of those who take the path, on the way to going to the center of the one about whom naught may be said, which presently I assume to be the Pleiadian cluster, you know, kind of like a head center for that great being. You know, in the state of samadhi, what happens to the energies of the body? You know, you sometimes see these yogi saints and so forth, they're in a state of samadhi. What's going on, really, there with the energies in the energy system? You know? It's all, you know, it's a bit like dying, you know. It's all gathered into the head center. See? So that's the same thing that happens when the planets are absorbed. It's all gathered into the head center. In a way, Uranus represents the head center of the solar logos. Of course, maybe Neptune represents in a deeper way the heart in the head, and maybe that's where it all ends up. But maybe in the larger cosmos system, the Pleiades, the 100, what are they? I mean, there's 800 plus now that they've discovered. Are there 1,000? Is it the correspondence of the 1,000-petaled lotus, the Pleiades? Everything is gathered into that center. There are some problems, of course, because some people say the Pleiades won't last long enough to gather anything. But on the other hand, there are etheric constellations. So when we're talking about the fusion of things, we're talking in etheric terms and in subtle terms, and we're not talking about dense planets sort of clumping together. That's not it at all. So samadhi is the symbol of synthesis for the human being, a high state. Let the forces come together, let them mount to the high place, and in all lines gather into one, something like that. Let them mount to the high place. Then from that lofty eminence up here, let the soul look out upon a world destroyed. Let the word go forth. Then let the word go forth. I still persist. So it's like dying. It's a state of total abstraction, and yet you live. So that happens at the end of every system. Our solar system, our cosmos system, it's all gathered into the head center. And then, after it's gathered into the head center, it's reabsorbed by that which to it represents the sun. Because the sun is the final resolver. And whatever the final planet may be, whether it's Uranus or Neptune, and I think, you know, there's no way for us to know for sure, it will all be gathered into the sun, which is the final synthesis. And that's like samadhi. Okay. The taking of initiation is now often seen and is far more frequent today than at any other time in the history of the race. That's a great statement. And this was written, of course, in the 1940s. For those who have succeeded, the next step forward and the new spiritual enticement must be clearly disclosed. What is suggested to you by these words, spiritual enticement? I know, you know, they're not normal words, but when you entice someone, you know, you, it's come hither, you know, because I have here something for you that you won't get anyplace else. So it is a great anticipation, an almost irresistible presentation of possibility. When something is enticing, it's very hard to resist. So everybody has to have an objective that takes them on farther, you know? What's your newest spiritual enticement? Do you have one? I think I have one, but I'm not telling. Okay, the next step forward and the new spiritual enticement must be clearly disclosed, and he's doing that. And for some people, it might be the way of higher evolution. Evolution is not a static thing. Death cannot be the reward of living effort. To be static, to have attained all that can be attained, and to be at a complete standstill would be utter death, my brothers, and there is no death. This is very reassuring, isn't it? We have to realize that. Actually, what we have to be able to do is come and go out of the body at will, so we prove to ourselves that death is an illusion. Kind of interesting, you know, you have to be at least an initiate of the second degree before a high soul can use you to become a walk-in, as it were, to use that particular language. In other words, like Lord Maitreya used the body of Master Jesus to enter when he needed to, but you have to be a second degree initiate, or at least let's say you have to have the sixth petal unfolded before that is possible. And I think, you know, as I've told you, I have a theory about the true Buddha and the prince Gautama, that there's quite a parallel there. As Lord Maitreya was to Jesus, so the Buddha was to Gautama, I believe. I have a lot of reasons for thinking that's the case. But, you know, it's a theory. There is only, let me put this on a little better. There is only progress from glory to glory, a moving forward from point to point on the divine way. And when he uses the word divine, how is it different from spiritual? A moving forward from point to point on the divine way. Why divine way? What do you think? Is that different? It really is different from the word spiritual. It is higher. And when he uses the word divine, he means the monad. That's what it means. And when he uses, in certain contexts, the word esoteric, esoteric ray and so forth, he means the monad. So there's only a moving forward from glory to glory, point to point on the divine way, and from revelation to revelation towards those points and revelations which are, perhaps, part of the goal of God himself. It seems like everybody's got a goal, doesn't it? It's kind of a Sagittarian view of the universe here. Even God has a goal, right? What do you think is the goal of our planetary logos? I talked about it a little earlier today. Yes, it would be. And which specific initiation is his goal? Well, okay. Let me show you the place where this is discussed This is an important page. It's in the Treatise on Cosmic Fire, page 384, and hopefully I haven't erased any more of my text. I did, in fact, erase the purposes of the first and second deity. Can't live without that. But I put them back. So now they have purpose again. The Solar Logos has for objective 9 initiations, the third cosmic initiation being his goal. Our Planetary Logos has for objective 7 initiations, the second cosmic initiation being his goal. What does he mean by objective and goal? I've turned this around and around. Sometimes I even think you can take some of these 9 or 7 at the same time as a cosmic initiation. Like I really wonder, for instance, whether the 5th of the 7th initiations that our planetary logos will take is not somehow coincident with the 2nd cosmic initiation at the time of the judgment day, something like that. But obviously DK is being, I think, a little bit vague here. He's not really elaborating on this. But I think these, the distant objective and the immediate goal, that's what is often suggested to me. You just know that goal has to be an immediate term, because there's another place in the book where it says, by the time this solar system is finished, the Solar Logos will have taken either the 4th or the 5th cosmic initiation. So goal is more like short term, and objective is like the distant objective. So there will be others of these smaller initiations that go on beyond the cosmic initiations, which occur alongside and maybe at the same time as the shorter series. So what is the goal of our planetary logos? Well, to straighten out his very distressed emotional body. He has a very distressed emotional body on the 4th level of the cosmic astral plane. And he's already in process of fixing the job. And he's moving on to the 5th level of the cosmic astral plane, where everything will quiet down a bit. And Venus has more or less mastered the 5th level of the cosmic astral plane and is moving on to the 6th level, which means cosmic buddhi, I suppose, responsive to cosmic buddhi. These are big thoughts, but they tell us something about the goal, the actual immediate objective. And this means that we have to solve the problem of desire on our planet. And so you can see how the Buddha is involved in helping the planetary logos to achieve his goal by straightening out the desire body of humanity. Yes, Martha. Okay, the question is about, is it so that when the planetary logos takes the 5th initiation, then the earth becomes sacred? So here it is in general stated that, but there are 3 parts to a planetary logos, and all of them are capable of initiation. For instance, there is the globe level, the initiation of a globe lord. There's the initiation of a chain lord, and there's the initiation of a scheme lord, who is the planetary logos itself. So to which one of those 3 beings does the 5th initiation accompanied by sacredness apply? Maybe. It might be so. In which case, our Earth would become a sacred planet. Our whole thing would become a sacred planet toward the end of this solar system, and not before. Well, I'll tell you why. because he's very far from the fifth cosmic initiation. He hasn't even taken the second cosmic initiation. But you know how it goes with human beings. Once you take the second, everything goes fast, so maybe, who knows the timing? These are the things that the masters know, how fast this can occur. And they work all the time under the pressure of knowing the schedule. We don't know the schedule, so we can go pick the flowers or something, you know? But they know the schedule. And so they have a great sense of urgency about what they do, even though they don't show it emotionally, per se. We're continuing from the middle of the book here. So we said, what is the goal of God himself? Well, to become a great station of light, as you were emphasizing, at least in the local cosmos. Because, you know, putting things in proportion, there are some beings to whom our solar logos is related, and our solar logos stands to those beings as a crystal stands to us. In other words, our solar logos is tiny, a tiny little crystal in the mineral kingdom compared with these still greater beings. So this idea of being a station of light is true, and yet it has to be understood that we have to speak about our local cosmos. Because from a certain perspective, there are some beings who wouldn't even notice that our solar system exists, like we wouldn't notice that a speck of dust exists or a tiny little cell. I guess, you know, if you ever get a hold of one of those books called The Powers of Ten, maybe you've seen them. 10 × 10 × 10 × 10 up, 10 to the minus to the minus, 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 negative exponents down, and it shows you that whole scope of super big and super small. Reading those kinds of things gives us a good idea of what we're involved with in our cosmos system. So, what do you think? Progress from glory to glory. Sounds very optimistic, doesn't it? What are the goals? What the goals are upon the higher way is yet utterly unknown to you. Well, not entirely, because Master DK has told us. He's written about the way of higher evolution in three places. Do you know those three places? Think. Three books. Cosmic Fire, The Way of Higher Evolution, he began to tell quite a bit about it. But even before that, he laid out the subject in what little book? Initiation, Human and Solar. And then later he said, and now I have received permission to tell you even more about the way of higher evolution in this book. And we're going to get into that. By the time we're finished with this, provided all goes well, you know, and we can sustain these classes, we'll have a vision which will certainly give everyone plenty to work for thousands of years to come, in most cases. So he says, what are the objectives upon the higher way? And by the way, these higher ways are not determined strictly by the ray. They are not ray paths. There are some tendencies for certain monadic ray types, because by that time it's not the soul ray that's treading these paths. It's the monad that's treading the path. So it's the monadic ray which counts in which of these paths we tread. For instance, he says, the second path of magnetic work, which is involved in clearing out the astral plane by working from the cosmic astral plane, is trodden by a lot of fifth ray monads. Now here's an interesting analogy. When we have a situation of glamour, and we want to clear that out in our own personal life, we are called upon to use the fifth ray coming out of the Ajna Center and Venus, the center of the fifth ray, and to project that beam of intelligent light into the world of glamour. So in our own little microcosmic way, we use the focused beam of mind, okay, backed up by the soul, but the focused beam of mind to clear away our personal glamours. And these great masters and chohans of the beyond the sixth degree, they go to the cosmic astral plane, and they are fifth ray monads, and they manipulate those currents to help clear out our own solar systemic astral plane. It's very interesting. They use the color rose. It's just, you'd almost think you're reading science fiction sometimes when you read about what they do on these higher levels. But what I like about it, as I trust Master DK implicitly, because of the various ways he's proved himself, in so many things closer to home, closer to normal human thinking. So if he is so trustworthy there, why should he not be trustworthy with respect to these higher things that we consider to be almost like science fiction? So he tells a very beautiful story about the kinds of things that people like you and I will be doing. You know, just give us, I don't know, some hundreds of thousands of years, maybe a million years, or maybe much less, actually. How far do you think you are from the sixth initiation in years? Maybe, let's just suppose that people are beginning to make progress as rapidly as the Christ did. 4,000 years ago, the Chohan Jesus was a second degree initiate, as Joshua, the son of Nun, a general, a commander, a military person, 4,000 years ago. Now he's a Chohan. Okay, 5,000 years? Let's just give him the benefit of the doubt. Let's say he was special. And he did it in 4,000 years. So should we give ourselves 5,000, 6,000? Is that enough? That's only a few precessional ages. Pass through the age of Aquarius, pass through the age of Capricorn, pass through the age of Sagittarius, you're there. You're a Chohan. It will be quite a few lives, of course. Been there, done that. Leaving the cosmic physical plane quick. Well, anyway, you know, we can put these things in perspective, but the thing is that very little time is spent on the fixed cross. Very little time, relatively. So much time is spent on the, relatively 18 million years, 20 million years, 22 or 3 million years on the mutable cross, just a drop in the bucket. But when it comes to the cardinal cross, that's where the time is spent. It's like a diagram like this, you know, here. It's like this. And then it narrows down to a little passage called the fixed cross. And then it goes way out into a huge number of years, this crucifixion upon the cardinal cross. Now, if the chronology of the Brahmins that HBB believes in, and Sri Yukteswar did not, is correct, how many years do we have before this solar system is over? Give a guess. Waiting. Who will say the first foolish thing? Please. 2 million. 1 million. 2 million. Do I hear? Do I? 1 billion. 2 million. Do I hear? 10 million. 10 billion. 10 billion. 11 billion. He raises you one. 11 billion. First, second, and third. We will have another solar system. And it might be shorter. What is it? Milliard, billions, like he said, billions to 11 billion. I have 11 billion over here, going once, going twice. Okay, according to the Hindu chronology, 150 trillion years. That means 151 or 150 with 12 zeros. And that's how long that chronology says we have had our particular solar system. But of course, we're not just talking about the physical solar system. We're talking about the whole incarnational process of the solar logos. And we're talking, and we're really saying that the previous solar system, which was also an occult century in duration, that seems like a flexible term, lasted even longer, because the three last longer than the two, and the two last longer than the one. Now, Sri Yukteswar, you know, who one has to respect as Yogananda's teacher, and very, you know, first ray, you know, very somehow impressive character. A Taurus, by the way, I believe. Looks like a lot of Leo. He said, these figures are much too large. They are symbolic figures, and really, and he reduced them accordingly, and some of the people who have followed the Yogananda chronology have much smaller estimates about these cycles. But Blavatsky swears by them. She says, these are not fanciful. These are as they are. And Philip Lindsay, you know, who is just excellent in his calculations of the cycles of the races and the planetary periods, says, no, these are the figures. So that's a lot of time for a solar system, isn't it? I mean, you know, not a solar system. What is it? We're exactly halfway through. We're halfway through. We've already spent 150 trillion according to this chronology. Now, that is so much bigger than any scientific figure that they would just laugh at such a claim. And they would have reasons for doing it. But the whole thing is, there's no understanding of the subjective levels through which the solar logos has passed and will pass. And we're not talking about just the duration of the physical manifestation. So just, you know, you know the figures. Just look in right around page 39 of Cosmic Fire. There's a footnote. And that footnote is, it's quite an amazing, you know, quite an amazing footnote. Did I say around page 39? It's footnote number 6. And here is... Don't tell me I've erased my footnote. Oh, here it is. So, these are the figures, and at least we know the figures are there. Constitute the whole period of Brahman's age, a Mahakalpa. So, this is incorrect. Yeah, this is incorrect. I don't know how it happened, but it's 311 trillion, 40 billion, 311 trillion, 40 billion years. That's it. So let's hope we can keep that, because that would be 100 times a day of Brahma, which is 3 trillion, 110 billion, 400 million years. So there's plenty of time, like all the time in the world, you know? Except I begin to think, I've wondered, this is going to be a tangent, okay? I've wondered whether the Universal Logos has a schedule, or whether he just takes as long as is necessary in order to accomplish what is given to him to accomplish in a particular universe. Because in a way, what's the rush, you know? It's just another outbreathing and another universe, and it's been going on forever, and See, here's the thing. This is my speculation, which is obviously coming from the abstract mind and not from the intuition, right? Because it's a speculation, right? Okay, do I want to save changes to the pop-up? Yes, I do. Universal redemption. What happens to the Black Lodge? What happens to all of those who have not yet fulfilled the algorithm or the plan that the Universal Logos has inherent within itself? Is the Universal Logos called upon to quit the universe before fulfillment? Or is it arranged that somehow every Universal Logos will fulfill the algorithm within its nature, no matter how long it takes? And I like to think that you can't leave anything in a state of imperfection. You know, just, well, this gets into a whole other thing, whether universes are progressive or not. And my analysis of this is that one universe does not lead to another, and that universes do not improve at all. Because if they did, then every universe would be infinitely perfect forever. But I won't get into that right now. Just suffice it to say, I have a reason for thinking that there must be a way to complete the job that any Universal Logos has and bring that job into completion when it returns to the great being. You know, to get off on that would be a real tangent, but it would take us so far into the third ray, we would forget what we're doing. So, I don't want to do that. What are the goals of higher way? This is not known. What divine qualities and objectives may be revealed to the Master and to the Christ as they tread the way which leads them off the cosmic physical plane altogether? You cannot know or sense, and if you could, you would not comprehend the meaning. I guess this puts things in proportion, doesn't it? When do we leave the cosmic physical plane? Having accomplished what? Is the Christ ready to leave the cosmic physical plane now? Forever? Maybe not, huh? So the Christ is an initiate of the seventh degree partially, and so is the Buddha partially. When do we leave the cosmic physical plane? At the initiation called, what's it called? It's called refusal. The refusal. The fifth initiation, the revelation. The sixth, the decision. The seventh, the resurrection. The eighth, the transition. And the ninth, the refusal. Now, this is way ahead. It's going to take you a little longer than 6,000 years to get there. Okay? 6,000 years, we hold out to you Chohanship. Okay? 5,000 or 6,000, something like that. But in terms of becoming a ninth degree initiate, it's very difficult to do on this planet. And when we are a ninth degree initiate, we end the illusion of the cosmic physical plane forever, which is, after all, the dense physical body. I mean, well, it's the physical body of the solar logos. So DK is saying, you don't know, you can't see, and if you could, you wouldn't comprehend. Eye hath not seen nor ear heard the things which God will reveal to those who tread the way to the innermost center. Innermost center. Innermost. That sounds like, well, that sounds like the ultimate, doesn't it? The very center of the universe. To those who love. So those who tread the way to the innermost center must be those who love. Very interesting. The ancient writing can be paraphrased as follows. It is impossible to realize the wonders of the future, which the planetary logos will unfold before those who have unfolded the second divine aspect, love, and who are therefore full members of the hierarchy, the center where the energy of love is anchored. And here he brings it right down to our own level, right into the hierarchy itself, at the door of which we are now knocking in the next few thousand years. Now, this is a little bit different vision than going to heaven forever and playing the harp. Or the worst vision, you know, there are worse visions of heaven. But of course, we make heaven in our own image, don't we? And in a way, we make God in our own image too, don't we? In other words, according to the mentality of the individual and the scope of his consciousness, so will be the God he conceives. Have you ever seen Buckminster Fuller's definition of God? You know who Buckminster Fuller is? No? Someone say who Buckminster Fuller is. He's a great futurist. He died not so long ago. He's the man who invented the geodesic dome. He was way ahead of his time. Some people have said he was a reincarnation of Leonardo. Well, there were a lot of things in common, although he didn't have the artistic quality. I want to see, it's so amazing. You know, like I said, people conceive God in their own image. You know, if you're saying man's image, God, that's true too. But, you know, is the God of the primitive individual in the very low culture the same as the God of the sophisticated man? So, you know, I tend to say it is not so. I'd like to find this for you because it's really interesting. No, I can't even spell Google. You know, Google is a number, isn't it? It's not just a search engine. What is Google? Do you know the definition of Google? No? Buckminster Fuller's Dymaxion map. Definition of God. I wonder if one can do this. Fuller's. Okay, let's try that. God definition. Definition of God, meaning of God, proper God, no more secondhand God. Well, this is really interesting. I don't want to get off on a tangent here, though. Definition of God. Definition of R. Buckminster Fuller by the... He's really a genius, you know, just incredible. And I just want to somehow make my point, but I don't think I'm going to be able to make it. I'll try to find that for you. Or maybe one of you can look it up on your computers. Let's see. Oh, God is a verb. Not a noun, I suppose. Okay, a designer is an emergent synthesis. God, there's a definition of God that is just incredible. He has some amazing things. This is not the one I'm thinking. I'm not a genius. I'm just a tremendous bundle of experience. He really has some amazing things. I just invent, then wait until man comes around to needing what I've invented. You know, very strong fifth ray in him. Fifth ray, seventh ray. Well, I'm not finding it, unfortunately. But there is, if you can find that somehow, it might be. You know, there's so many hits. How to know what your true purpose of life is. He actually, you know, he was very despairing. He almost committed suicide at a certain point. They tried to make him go into business. He didn't really want to do that. And he failed at it. God, definition of God, meaning of God, proper, improper. Well, I'm probably not going to find it. You know, I'll have to find it for you. But I'm not going to find it now, unfortunately. It goes on in one sentence this long. And it's the most third-rate definition you'll ever find anywhere. I was just astonished when I looked at it, and I said, ah, so this is Buckminster Fuller's idea of God. Somewhere it will be found. Yes, there are many, many hits, and a definition and proof of God, definition of the universe in synergetics, integrity, a definition and proof of God. Oh, it's so interesting. Anyway, maybe you can judge to see whether you think he has a third-ray mind or not. Maybe some sort of fifth-ray soul or, you know, very strong seventh-ray as well. Okay. Going right back and feeling frustrated that I haven't found it, but okay. So, for those who love the planetary logos, who is the initiator at the seventh initiation, whereas Sanat Kumara is the initiator at the fifth initiation, and an unknown existence, not given a name, is the initiator at the sixth initiation. And, you know, all that is in the easy little book called Initiation Human and Solar. Easy little book. The planetary logos will present wonders before the aspiring initiate who is moving as a monad on the way of higher evolution. Okay. It is interesting to realize that the unfoldment of the love nature is that which opens the door and leads to the way of higher evolution, and that nothing else will open it. When you read something like that, what do you think? It's almost like, you know, it's almost like, no man cometh to the Father except through me. You know, it's a bit like, if you don't fulfill love, then you cannot know what the monadic life is like. You cannot know will. What does it mean to you if you see that the monad is on the second subplane of the cosmic physical plane, and that it has its home within the sun? Do you think there is a second ray component to the monad, just generically speaking? I think so. But I was talking with Gisler earlier. We were, you know, where do you find the heart center of the solar logos? How is the monadic plane different from the logoic plane? And as far as I can tell, the etheric heart center of the solar logos is on the monadic plane. I've sometimes wondered whether the seven, well, you know, there's something about the seven head centers there as well. Maybe of the planetary logos, that the seven head centers of the planetary logos are found on the monadic plane. Anyway, it turns out that love is important to open the door. Why would this be so? It is only the love nature which opens the way of higher evolution. This way leads the master off the cosmic physical plane onto the cosmic astral plane, or to a level of cosmic awareness whereon is generated that cosmic impulse we call love. So where does love come from as far as we are concerned for practical purposes? Yes. Yes. For practical purposes, and beyond the Buddhic plane and beyond the monadic plane is the cosmic astral plane. And what we are calling love is generated on that level, that particular impulse, that magnetic impulse generated on the cosmic astral plane. And, you know, just so we get the map, this is the picture right there. It's not filled in. Every one of these six other planes could be filled in, but only the lowest one is given any detail. But he's telling us that our love energy is coming from up here. And this is something about the way the Christ is somehow making application to the cosmic astral plane. As a matter of fact, there are two great teachers who received a cosmic touch, and they are the Christ and the Buddha. So the Christ's cosmic touch came from the cosmic astral plane. And what about the Buddha's cosmic touch? Cosmic mental plane. So they're bringing down a tremendous energy into humanity. And that all came at their sixth initiation. Why is the sixth initiation so important? What does the number six suggest to us? What does the number six suggest to us? It's correlated with which one of our aspects, which one of our principles, which one of our factors in our energy system. Yes, if you count from below, from above down, it's the astral body. If you count from below above, it's the what? Monad. So at the sixth initiation comes some kind of revelation which is in line with the ray of our monad. For the Buddha, it was the third ray, hence the cosmic mental plane. For the Christ, it was the second ray, hence the cosmic astral plane. Okay, so it will be obvious to you that this treatise is not written to instruct members of the hierarchy. Well, sometimes I wonder, you know, there are some things included in this treatise that I imagine very high initiates could use. But only in general for aspirants and disciples and initiates below the grade of the third initiation. So much that I will say will be somewhat blind or veiled in symbol. Much that I could say, if words existed of an adequate nature, will not be said. So we obviously have to, you know, we have to intuit. We have to follow the hints. What's the next hint for any one of us? We have to follow it. Those that have eyes to see and ears to hear will read between the lines and correctly interpret my symbols and hints and references. So he really is writing for the intuitive disciple, which we hope to become. And that doesn't just mean, you know, knowing things about what's going on right here. Just knowing. That's a lot of psychism is masquerading as intuition. To many, what I will say will be as meaningless as the treatise on cosmic fire. Excuse me. Just swallowed the microphone. As a treatise on cosmic fire is to the average reader, and as the entire theme of initiation is to the ignorant and undeveloped man. So he's promising here to write some things that will prove meaningless to a number of us. Much, however, should be of practical service to the struggling disciple. And I want these concluding pages, what does he want to do? I love this. I want to fire his zeal, deepen his understanding, stimulate his capacity to love, and enlighten his mind. That's what Master DK wants to do for us as we read these pages. What is zeal, you know? It has a lot to do with aspiration, doesn't it? He wants to put some fire in the solar plexus, right? Deepen our understanding, stimulate our capacity to love, enlighten our mind. That's what he wants to do. Such is what I seek to do. On his part, people like ourselves, let him approach this subject with deep humility, with a meditative and reflective attitude, and with a refusal to materialize the presented concepts, as is so easy a thing to do. Let him refuse to step down the teaching to the level of physical consciousness. In these words, I have conveyed a basic hint. What do you think is the hint? let him refuse to step down the teaching to the level of his physical consciousness. And then he says, I've given you a big hint here, a basic hint. This teaching depends upon the building of the Antikarana. As you follow the Antikarana, does it lead only to the physical consciousness of the planetary or solar logos? Where does it lead? Higher into, out of the dense physical area, where at best we can be a personality or maybe a super personality that we call the ego on the higher mental plane. But the Antikarana leads into what part of the planetary and solar logos? Into what part? Yes, into the cosmic etheric level of the planetary and solar logos, where the spiritual triad has its focus, and which is a solar logoic principle, whereas the dense physical is not. So you know what he's trying to do here? He's trying to get us off the dense physical level of the planetary and solar logos. Now, you know, most people can't even conceive what in the world that could mean. That's everything they know about life. Time and space and reincarnation and all of the forms with which they are familiar. That's everything. And he says, don't go there. Don't descend into the dense physical layers of the ones in whom you move and have your being. Live and move and have your being. So he wants us to keep these teachings principled in the principles of the planetary and solar logos, not in these dense levels. You know, it's so easy to materialize a concept and thus fall into illusion. All right. And here's where this is really important what he says here. Love and light are the great revealers. And if the student truly seeks to understand and profit by what I am endeavoring to teach, let him love all men more deeply, and let him see to it that his light shines in a dark place, for in that light shall he see light. So isn't it, you know, so many people have, you know, corresponded with the people in the esoteric community. They always finish, love and light, Jane. Love and light, Joe. Okay. I guess we got into the habit of that in the arcane school. Love and light. Okay, just like tossing it off your tongue. Love and light. But he's saying that these are the great revealers. And if we're going to get anything out of what he's teaching, we have to love more deeply and let our light shine. So it sounds very simple, doesn't it? I mean, you know, in a way, well, let's say it sounds clear. We know what to do. It shouldn't be so hard, right? Because he's saying, I'll give you something out of this book. This is okay. It's way beyond you, but you will get something out of it, as long as you love and let your light shine. This is just the introduction to the whole second part of the book, where he deals with the initiations in great depth, Okay. So in considering our theme, I propose to divide what I have to say according to my usual custom as follows, and these will be the subjects. There's a whole unit here of more than 100 pages on the science of the Antikarana. This will be important to study. We use it all the time in our meditations, but it's important to have that review as to what's really happening. The aspirant and the mysteries of initiation, the entering of the two doors, the entering of the ashrams, very important, the dual life of the initiatory process, the science of the Antikarana, the aspirant and the major initiations, the relation of the seven rays to the initiations, the significance of the initiations, the aspirant and the seven centers. What subjects? Huge subjects. I have given you here and elsewhere in my writings all that it is at this time possible to give anent the planetary centers and the rays, including the rays of the nations and the races. You will find a wealth of information hidden in my various books, if due research is made and the material is gathered into a coherent whole. Do you believe this to be the case? He said, be careful about making compilations about the chakras because, you know, it can get out and do some harm. But in the hands of the right people, there's a tremendous amount of information. Have you made compilations on the chakras or seen them and so forth? It's incredible what he's put in there. I suggest that you study and compare, read and search topically, which now the Alice Bailey CD-ROM allows us to do, and extract all that I have said about the various nations, their governing constellations, and their planetary rulers. This will facilitate research into the relation of the planetary centers through the systemic centers, the sacred planets, and the energies pouring through them from the constellations which they rule in the esoteric sense. So basically, what he's saying, I'm giving you a very wide horizon, but you will find it much more closely related than you ever thought possible. I'm expanding the picture, but I'm connecting everything up for you. And this is, of course, again, the second ray, the divine vision, you might say. So this is one of the paradoxes of occultism, he says, but it can be understood if the student remembers that the centers of etheric body, his etheric body, rule insofar as they are receptive or non-receptive to the influences emanating from the planet via the planetary centers. Okay, so we need to know these national factors and the energies coming from the planetary centers. Here's what he says, it would not be advisable for me to give out the relation of the planetary centers to the centers of the human being, although we figure that out. There is not enough love present as yet to balance such knowledge and to offset any possible misuse with its dire consequences. The reason I include them in the above outline is to show the organic wholeness of our theme. For the life of man encompasses the abstract and subjective, as well as the outer physical levels of the manifested world. So he's laying out for us a huge subject area. How is this different from cosmic fire? Is it? What do you think? We've, you know, been reading in cosmic fire. You've had a study group in cosmic fire. Now you're studying this. How is it different? More, you think, perhaps more practical, more useful information. Mm-hmm. It's certainly written on a different ray, isn't it? Cosmic fire was written on what rays? 3-in-1. And this is a big ray 2 treatise. And basically, it's psychology, astrology, healing, and education. That's what we're dealing with here in this treatise. Okay. So I know it's, you know, kind of after lunch and all of that, but let's keep our concentration. I've made two affirmations during the past years about an end to the hierarchy. One was that as a result of the cleansing of the earth through the medium of the World War, 1914 to 1945, and through the suffering to which humanity has been subjected, with a consequent purifying effect which we'll demonstrate later, it will be possible for the hierarchy to externalize itself and function openly upon the physical plane. The time equation is still fluid. What happened? We read in some of the books that the Christ will be with us by the end of the 20th century. The Masters will be coming out soon, and I think Master DK himself in New York, perhaps, was planning an early externalization toward the later middle of the last century. But something happened.
She also writes that the economic problems will disappear before the end of the 19th century. Apparently, that's not the case.
You don't mean 19th century, you mean 20th. Atomic energy was discovered 2,000 years too early, and it changed everything in the equation. Because it became possible then, which was not possible before, for a kingdom of nature to eliminate itself and have to start all over again, which would be a very serious disruption in the whole time-space schedule of the planetary logos and even of the solar logos. The solar logos was concerned. And I've told you this before, but in 1917, the solar logos almost intervened in the First World War. Not the planetary logos, solar logos. So atomic energy, atomic bomb, hydrogen bomb, proliferation of nuclear power, it changed many things. So now there's been a delay. And, you know, it was really interesting. The hierarchy cannot stop an ashram from inquiring about the nature of truth. And the fifth ray ashram pushed ahead so far, way beyond the expectations of the hierarchy. So when was atomic energy supposed to be discovered? They say, in the age of what? Not the age of Aquarius. Age of the next one. The next one. The next one. And you know we move backwards that way. So in the age of Capricorn, that's when atomic energy was scheduled to be discovered and released, presuming a whole era of brotherhood and all of that would be cultivated during the age of Aquarius. But we're, you know, things changed. So now the schedule is this, that by the year 2025, the hierarchy will be laying its first plans for the externalization of the hierarchy to be followed by the reappearance of the Christ. Not in the 20th century at all, but a new timing for the 21st century and maybe beyond. It will have to be, I suspect, by the year 2117, because that is when the age of Aquarius technically begins, according to DK. Yes? Well, when it was released, you know, it's a bit like the first, it's a bit like the World War. What's he saying here? Look, you've had a World War, and now we can externalize. It's a terrible thing, and now we can externalize. So out comes atomic energy, and he says, this is a magnificent spiritual revelation. You may destroy yourself, but it's magnificent. And what is the good thing that we can do because of it? So maybe increased potentials will be there, saving a humanity from meaningless labor and so forth, giving time for the cultivation of spiritual attitudes and so forth. So like Master Moria sometimes says, he says, the worse, the better. It's a typical first ray approach. You know, well, you know, we don't want this war to happen. This is terrible. So everybody works against the war. The war happens, and because of the war, totally unexpected opportunities are opening up. It's what happens with the first ray. It's terrible, and more opportunities come. Yeah, yeah. Well, once it was rolling, once it was... See, the thing is about the ashrams that once the demanding minds ask the correct questions, they are obliged to answer correctly. See, and we had certain demanding minds with Einstein and Bohr and Teller and Fermi and all those, you know, the Curies. You know, they, somehow that fifth ray ashram, even though Curie was on the seventh ray, but still the seventh and the fifth ray worked together, they were heading in the right direction. And then, of course, it began to proliferate. So they are not allowed to stop humanity in that way, but they can phase out the promotive influence. In other words, the fifth ray was so tremendously powerful that Sanat Kumara had to stop in, had to phase out the influence of the fifth ray ashram from the year 1950 to the year 2000. It took that long to withdraw it because it was going so much faster than any of the other ashrams. See, you know, so he used the word balance, didn't he, here, just a minute ago? Okay, so it will be possible for hierarchy to externalize itself because of this terrible war that you've just been through that all of us tried to prevent. We can now come and appear. You know, there probably would have been a different method of appearance, but we've been subjected to a tremendous cleansing, and he says the effect will appear later. This will indicate a return to the situation which existed in Atlantean days when, using the biblical symbolism, God himself walked among men. Divinity was present in physical form because the members of the hierarchy were guiding and directing the affairs of humanity as far as innate free will permitted. So it is now a return to the condition of Atlantean days when there was intimacy between the members of the hierarchy and humanity, and they were in the same space, and the temples of initiation were founded, and the doors of initiation were open, and many took initiation, and now again, this will happen on a higher turn of the spiral. He did say that the attempt to destroy the Aryan race will be by fire. There will be an attempt to destroy the Aryan race by fire. Now, somewhat, he seemed to suggest that the Great World War, 14 to 45, was that. But there are others who think that there's still a future phase of that attempt to destroy the race by fire. But I like the word attempt, at least, because it sounds like it won't succeed. On a higher turn of the spiral, this will happen again. They will come out. The masters will walk openly among men. Secondly, the hierarchy will then restore the ancient mysteries, the ancient landmarks, that's a Masonic term, to keep truth always undistorted before the eyes of men. The ancient landmarks so earnestly preserved by the Masonic tradition, which have been securely embalmed like a mummy, in Masonic ritual, awaiting the day of resurrection, meaning that 99% of the Masons don't know what they're really doing. They don't know about the ancient mysteries which are hidden in the forms which have been preserved since Egyptian times and earlier. But the day will come. Are there any questions or thoughts about this so far? Yes, what are we talking about actually? this could be the first question. You know, sometimes it's a question of the forest and the trees, right? He's laying out thoughts about the way of higher evolution and what lies before the Christ and high masters. He's talking about ongoing evolution. He's talking about how much he will say and not say. He's saying that light and love are the great revealers. He's giving us the table of contents of what lies ahead in the next 400 pages. He's saying, gather the knowledge together because I've given you more knowledge than you can possibly realize. And he's saying the hierarchy will externalize. And, you know, maybe in our next couple of incarnations, those that we now respect and approach from a distance will be those we are meeting on the physical plane. Now, you like the book, the book's called The Initiate Series. Yeah. And there, whoever the master was, Justin Morward Haig, JMH, he's driving around in sports cars, he's smoking cigars, he's living a social life with everybody. Well, you know, of course, that's just a play. That's a game. Because he wants to give them someone that they can relate to. Normal. He sits down with somebody on a bench and says, well, and he immediately starts talking about, you can be used. This is who I am. Let's get right to the point, you know. So here's a master of the wisdom teaching people on the physical plane. Some people have wondered who he was. Was he St. John the Beloved? Obviously a second-ray master, because he's dealing with the principle of right human relations all the time. Below the English master. Mm-hmm. Sir Thomas. The English master, Sir Thomas. Tut, 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 tut. I think so. You know, in the picture of the table of the hierarchies, or the table of our hierarchy, it goes like this. Let's see. How can I make this bigger? This is, I'll just have to do it this way. Well, here is the Christ. Here is a European master. Master Thomas, Sir Thomas, Sir Thomas More, English master, second ray master, Thomas More. I'm not sure. And I think here's Master KH below the European master, so I don't know. It must be a pretty high master because KH is connected directly with the Christ and the externalization of his ashram, his reappearance. And here's Master DK. So I think, look, there's some things that are left out. In the great second ray ashram, there are six subsidiary ashrams, five of which are already quite well organized, and one of which is in process of organization. And they're all run by masters, of course. So in this picture, something is definitely left out. Anyway, this master, how many of you have read the initiate books? They're really wonderful. So the initiate in the new world, the initiate in the dark cycle. That's where they talk about Krishnamurti. You know, he's leading people away from us. He's supposed to bring them to us, they said about him. Well, that's a bit of a mystery. It comes out more or less under Cyril Scott's name. And even that is a bit anonymous. Cyril Scott is a famous English musician. But apparently there was a behind him and going under the name of Broadbent, but that's not the real name, is a poet who was more closely connected with this particular master. At least that's how I understand it. I know you have maybe your own interpretation of it. But so there were at least two. It comes out, it can be traced to Cyril Scott, but Cyril Scott himself was a front for still another behind him, who then had the direct connection with the master. And this is going on in the 1920s and 30s, and the master is walking right here. We're told that Master Jesus meets with some of the prelates in the high church. Like maybe, I don't know, the Catholic Church, but certainly the Anglican Church. You know, so the masters are not like totally remote beings. They do actually put in an appearance. So anyway, this English master, I think he is an English master. He's, you know, he maybe is not, maybe he's more on the level of Master DK. There was a section in the book where he takes Broadbent, is it? He takes them to the home of Sir Thomas, tut tut, Sir Thomas, and obviously an English master. And Master KH and DK show up. They put in an appearance somehow. So this whole second ray group in England, which has a second ray soul, they all emphasize that second ray soul aspect. And it's been a long time since I've read it, But it's one of those books that it's hard to put down, you know. It just, you know, because it gets, you know, we read this heavy stuff from Master DK, you know, we have to think and think and think. But you read the initiate books, and it's written in a way that's very appealing, easier to assimilate, you know. Yeah, a real master is walking around. Of course, we do have to think back to the Christ in Palestine, a high master talking to James, John, Peter, you know, all the rest. You know, a master externalized, a sixth-degree initiate, or at least fifth, becoming sixth-degree initiate, walking around through the body of a third-degree initiate, talking to ordinary people. So, you know, can a master be present among us? I think so. And now it's going to happen again. So what we're doing is we're training ourselves right now so that we can be of effective at that time when the mysteries are externalized. This is our objective. You know, what are we doing in this life? What are you doing? See, think of it. This is part of the training for the externalization of the hierarchy in which you will be participating to the degree that you and I train ourselves to do so. And we're given our manuals for training. We've got the flight manual right here, you know. This is, we pretty well, you said it. That's the birds are commenting. We know what we have to do. And it's just a question of persisting and doing it. So that when our next incarnation comes, we get right into it instead of wandering around lost, you know. When you look at your own life, do you ever feel that perhaps you were asleep for part of it? Is it possible? Then came the big consciousness movement, didn't it? And that coincided with the Christ appropriating the vestures of the Buddha in 1966. Very interesting. The 1960s. Not the early 60s. The later 60s. The Christ took on the vestures of the Buddha, his triadal vehicles that the Buddha had left for him. And all of a sudden, whew, consciousness awakening all over the world. Especially beginning, you know, the East comes to the West. I mean, it had already begun, you know, it had started. But it really began in earnest then. So maybe before that time, a lot of us were less awake than we became after that time. A lot of people woke up, you know. And the fact that we're here right now studying these things is a sign that at some point we responded to a crisis of opportunity. We woke up. And now we're trying to express the result of having awakened. That's what we're trying to do. Are there any questions? Any thoughts? See, what do we do in our normal life? You know, what is our objective? See, then we get together in a class like this, and we present a super objective to the normal objectives. I want to do this, I want to do that, you know, I'm doing this, that, I'm busy, I'm this and that. And here is this big objective, which is all about learning how to cooperate with the hierarchy in externalizing the divine plan. That's a big objective. Yes, Anne, you had a point. There are six subsidiary ashrams. Yes, because the main ashram is 2 sub 2, and that is 2 sub 2. That's KH's ashram. Then there's DK's ashram. And then there's, you know, the ashram 2 sub 1, 2 sub 3, 2 sub 4, 2 sub 2. I think so. I mean, you know, Alice Bailey is with her. And DK has his own. 2 sub 3. Probably. Well, we don't know which one is not organized. He didn't say which one is not organized. Maybe it's 2 sub 4 that's not quite organized. The esoteric healers are running around all over the place, 2 sub 7. The New World Religion people, 2 sub 6, are pretty strong. There are many people who are trying to measure the soul, 2 sub 5. So 2 sub 4, with the monadic ray of the fourth ray coming in now in 2025, that may be the one that is in process of being organized. But that's just a speculation. Now, how it goes is there's hardly any subsidiary first-ray ashrams organized. Not yet. There are a few in the sixth-ray ashram. There's a couple in the third-ray ashram. I don't know the others, but somewhere he talks about it. Eventually, there will be 49, and probably this will happen during the Aquarian Age. Because it's an Aquarius, you know, it has to do with the hierarchy. It's hierarchy in the seventh ray. It means hierarchy, Aquarius, comes to Earth, seventh ray. So no matter what our lives may seem to be at the present time, and we're doing this and we're doing that, this is what we're really doing from a soul perspective, being trained to be co-workers with the hierarchy, by fulfilling the initiation which lies before us next, whatever it may be. I'll just a little more here, and then, you know, I know we have to eat soon. Take a break, you know. This is all about the restoration of the mysteries. Be good for Lena to be here because she's involved in masonry. These ancient mysteries were originally given to humanity by the hierarchy and were, in their turn, received by the hierarchy from the Great White Lodge on Sirius. So Sirius has a lot to do with masonry, with Egypt, and with the ancient mysteries. The Egyptian religion or way of spirituality is very oriented towards the star Sirius. These ancient mysteries, they contain the clue of the evolutionary process hidden in numbers and words. They veil the secret of man's origin and destiny, picturing for him in rite and ritual the long, long path which he must tread. Anyone who gets involved in masonry realizes that this is so. They provide also, when rightly interpreted and correctly presented, the teaching which humanity needs in order to progress from darkness to light, from the unreal to the real, from death to immortality. So basically, the ancient mysteries here are at least telling us about the progression through the first three initiations, but even through the first five. Darkness to light is somewhat the first initiation. The real, from the unreal to the real, somewhat the second initiation, but also the fourth. Death to immortality, beginning at the third initiation, but also definitely the fifth initiation. Any true Mason who understands, even if only to a slight degree, the implications of that in which he participates will recognize this most ancient of Oriental prayers, giving the key to the 3 degrees of the Blue Lodge. Well, the authentic Blue Lodge is where? The real Blue Lodge. We call it Blue Lodge Masonry, the first. It's on Sirius, the real Blue Lodge. And sometimes when you look at Sirius, they call it Blue Star. So when this man, Michael Erlewine, he created the Blue Star astrology programs and so forth, it's all about Sirius. I mean, that was the inspiring, I think it was the inspiring idea. I mention here the Masonic purpose because it is closely related to the restoration of the mysteries and has held the clue down the ages to that long-awaited restoration, to the platform of which the restored teaching can be based and the structure which they can express in powerful ritual, in organized, detailed rites, the history of man's movement forward upon the path of return. So somehow we have not lost the history. It's involved in the rituals. And masonry is coming back in a seventh-ray age in a sign, Aquarius, which will emphasize the fraternity, the brotherhood, the sisterhood, the the getting together of the souls along the seventh ray line. So that's one way through Masonry that the mysteries will be restored, but in other ways too, they will be restored. And along every ray line, the mysteries will be restored, and particularly through Masonry, the Church, and the banded esoteric organisms, the educational esoteric groups, such as what we're involved in. The mysteries will be restored in other ways also, for they contain much besides that which the Masonic rites can reveal or the religious rituals and ceremonies can disclose. They contain within their teaching the formulas, the key to the science which will unlock the mystery of electricity. This will be the fifth ray revelation of the mysteries. You know, there are various keys to the secret doctrine, and you've read about them, you know, the physiological key, the astronomical key, the astrological key, the symbolic key, and so forth. There are the different schools of Indian philosophy, all these different ways, according to our ray and according to what we want to pursue. So the mysteries will be revealed along the fifth ray line, according to which HPB spoke about. Though much progress has already been made by science along this line, it is as yet only embryonic in nature. So all this stuff that we know about the atom at the present moment, he says, just a little embryo. That's all it is. And even in the last, 70 years since this has been written, it's still embryonic compared to what will be revealed when the middle form of electricity not yet known about, called neutral electricity or balanced electricity, is revealed. Only embryonic, and only when the hierarchy is present visibly on Earth and the mysteries of which the masters are the custodians are given openly to man, will the true secret and nature of electrical phenomena be revealed. So that's going to be a huge fifth ray undertaking, and it won't come yet until the masters are walking among us. This is all about the mysteries. Let's just Yeah. This little section is about the mysteries. Yes. What is meant by the word electrical? It is meant the constitution of matter energy according to a bipolar understanding. In other words, what is positivity? What is negativity? What is the structure of the atom? How can these forms of electricity be wielded on the etheric plane and not just in the forms of dense physical electricity that we have now? So it's going to take the study of electricity up onto the etheric level, which it already is starting there, but only on the fourth ether. It has farther to go. Electrical. And also it will be involved in increasing study of light, radiation, and prana. And the study of prana will be also an aspect of the science of electricity. So basically, it will be all about the mastery of subtle energy and the improvement of human life through the mastery of subtle energy, which is only now being hinted at, I think. It is that whole thing is exactly that. Vibration, light, sound, color, it will cover, the mystery of electricity will cover those four areas.
We are moving in the right direction in the sense that we are harnessing electricity from wind and sun.
Okay, and this is practical in that sense and useful. In some ways, we are moving in the right direction. In other ways, we are beginning to manipulate the structure of physical matter in ways which may not be approved. So they did this in Atlantis, we are told, and you know, the manipulation came in there for selfish motives, changing the structure of things that the Creator has made, and even maybe making the quality of our food dangerous through genetic manipulation for financial motives. You know how it is. You hear some terrible things about this company called Monsanto, and they sell seeds that you have to buy at a big price, and then they won't regerminate. There will be no more seeds. You have to buy again. It's all terribly selfish and thwarting the bounty of nature. So we have to be very careful about our potentials for genetic manipulation. Suppose, you know, it probably has been done before, but to create races of slave beings that will do exactly what we want them to do because they don't have the intelligence to do otherwise, and we'll do this by genetic manipulation, you see. So we have to be very careful when the fifth ray and seventh ray get together like that. The second ray had better be guiding, which is the reason why the White Magic Book and all this emphasis upon the heart and the soul is being given out, so we don't fall into an age of magical materialism. As a matter of fact, it's going to happen anyway. The purely mental magicians are on their way, the combination of the fifth and seventh rays, and the white magicians have to balance that. So we are representing here a second ray approach, which is very needed to create the right relations in society so these new powers can be used without destructive results. I wonder if we really realize the extent of the responsibility which is being placed on us at this time, on a hot day in Denmark. Well, you know, it's after lunch, it's hot, it's all that. And he's, you know, talking about the future and the, you know, so much of what we are studying is about what's going to happen in the future. And we have to have the faith to think that it's worthwhile to study now in order to prepare for that future, which we believe in. A lot of people would say, you know, look, you only live once and you're really wasting your time. Why don't you really live, you know? Go have a vacation, you know, have some, you know, well, I was going to say have a big meal, but we can do that here. You know, go live a little, meaning indulge your elementals. And we're saying, well, wait, we're souls here, and we're planning for our next incarnation, and we want to build a system of knowledge which will help us live in the right way in the future. They say a waste of time. So it's our job to convince the people, the eat, drink, and be merry crowd, that they are the ones who are wasting their time, that reincarnation is a reality, that karma is a reality, that evolution is a reality in terms of consciousness. This is what we, this is our educative job. I told you I'm going to be practicing on my very materialistically minded friend in Berlin in just about a month. He's going to be a tough nut, you know, but he has a Mercury-Venus conjunction in Capricorn, square my Mercury. So we're going to have a good time talking about what is real and what is unreal. You know, the Capricorn version of what is real, you know, this is it, up to a certain point. And the Aries say, have you ever thought of this, you know, birthplace of ideas, new vision, you know, it'll be interesting. It will be fun. Well, look, I'll tell you what. I think we'll, you know, maybe take a little break here. Take a little break so you don't melt under the sun. Poor Martha. You're in the sunlight, Martha. You're going to melt. You're going to melt. We'll take a little break. We'll come back in 20 minutes, 19 minutes. Come back at 4 o'clock, 2 o'clock GMT. And try to drink something stimulating, please. Whatever works, okay? Whatever works.